Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk, a podcast where we feature individuals and organizations in and around Oakland Chinatown who are working hard to bring our API and Black communities together. By highlighting their stories, we hope to encourage inclusive, intergenerational, and anti-racist perspectives in all spaces. I'm Akemi Chanimai, the program manager at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center, and this is Let's Talk. Today, we are going to hear from Michael Wohr and Chen Yu, two poets who teamed up to create Two Languages, One Community, which began as a workshop that uses writing and translation to exchange culture and life experiences between African-Americans and Chinese speakers. You can learn more about their project at twolanguagesonecommunity.com. Joining as their facilitator is Hoi Leung, a curator at the Chinese Culture Center of San Francisco.
I'm really excited to talk to you, Michael Wohr and Chen Yu, because I think we've known each other, I think around 2018 or 2019. And it's such like a kind of like a bookend to our collaborative relationship and also to a lot of things that has happened in the past several years. So it's really a good opportunity for me and for us to catch up with one another and actually reflect on some of the work that has taken place and that we have done together in this moment in time.
I'm so glad we can still connect across the ocean here and continue our work together.
I cannot emphasize enough that the work artists are doing today are so vital and so important. So I think especially because of that, I'm just really excited to be in conversation with you. I love that we are hosted by the virtual space of Oakland Asian Cultural Center. And I know this organization has played a very special role in the Two Languages, One Community projects. So I would like to start off, by just asking, what was it like and, how did everything get started? What was the process behind Catching Memory?
Michael and I met in a poetry reading series by the Friends of San Francisco Public Library, which was hosted by the poet laureate Jack Hirschman, and we were both poets invited to the series. I saw Michael's reading first, and we chatted. He expressed his longtime desire for his poetry to be translated into Chinese. And I write poetry both in English and Chinese. So we started with a first personal collaboration between two poets. And we, through the process, we find out how much there is just by exchanging poetry and translating, and we can learn from each other. I translated some of Michael's poems into Chinese, and I showed him my English drafts of my poems. And for every sentence we look at and translate, and there's so much behind it. And then we both love our communities and we love community work. So we say to each other, why don't we bring our communities together? So we decide to do a workshop series together, and we reach out to the senior communities around, and eventually we end up having a workshop for many, actually, community leaders and the writers from both sides. And that's how we started with OACC.
Chun gave a very succinct accounting of what we went through. But we went through all kinds of different, renditions and variations. And at first we started wanting to work with kids. Well, then we wanted to specifically work with elders, but we wound up working initially with a community in between the two. And so, and it's been wonderful, wonderful. And so we've put together a project, Catching Memory, is a translated, it's a bilingual publication that we've been working on, that both prose and poetry. And then we're also working on an anthology now that focuses on poetry, and it's African-American writers and Asian writers, and there's just like six of us, and those poems will also be bilingual. So those are two major publications, because the project is to bring community together through translation, writing, specifically poetry now, and publication.
And I do want to add one more, you know, ask you a question about translation and the process of really empathizing with each other through the language. So maybe this is more of a question for Chen. It's more like when you first, like, I think see through Michael's eyes and through his words, whether that is like a deeply sort of personal or emotional process, or do you feel more like maybe there's more analytical or scholarly? What kind of framework do you use when you try to translate Michael's poetry?
First, I want to talk a little bit about how I grew up in China. When I was growing up in China, I grew up during the Chinese Cultural Revolution in China, and the country was isolated, quite isolated from the world. I never saw a foreigner before until I went to college, actually. And but Black history was taught in schools of China. So I, as a young child, I knew about Black history in America and what the people went through. So I was deeply, deeply compassionate towards the, you know, towards the Black people here. And this is a process of also relearning for me and also connecting with that part, with that past. For example, in the first poem I translate of Michael's is called Black Star. It's about his mother. There he referred to the word Shinola, which I did not grow up with. And we had this long conversation. I had to do research on the internet to find out what that word means to Chinese people now, because it has to be understood and by the readers now. And so, Michael, do you want to read the English version, then I read the Chinese version?
Okay. So this is Black Star, Gaynell War, 1932 to 2015. She was called Shinola outside her name, as slight against her blackness, by souls lost inescapably in her dark attraction and blinded by her radiance in the sky.
黑明星作为对她的黑的蔑视, 她被那些失落在她无法逃脱的黑色的吸引力中和被她在天空中耀眼的光芒照瞎了眼睛的灵魂们外号为西奴拉邪游。The word Shinola, I find out, you know, from the Chinese internet, is a fashion company now. It didn't refer to the shoe polish that Michael is referring to. So I had to add the word shoe polish after Shinola to point out that's why he's using it there. Yeah, so that's just one example. And that took like back and forth quite a while.
And not only was it a clothing company, but it was a luxury company for watches. And until we had that discussion, I had no idea. So I researched it as well when I learned that from Chun and found out that it's the same company. The company that produced the shoe polish is the same company that now produces the luxury watches.
Right. So that tells you, just with a little short poem like that, what we had gone through and find out about the history and the current situation of things. And now I want to proceed to read a poem I wrote for my mother, which is called Beauty Lou. This is actually referring to how I see her, how I saw her when I was a child. Beauty Lou. People call Mama Beauty Lou. Her family name is Lou. Her face a smooth oval shape. Her skin a light olive color. Under her eyebrows like willow leaves. Her eyes were bright and clear as the blue sky above, where I never saw a trace of fear or doubt, where my childhood glimmered with a golden lining in the raging storms of a tragic revolution which she withstood with her beauty and courage. My heaven on earth. 陆美人，人们称妈妈为陆美人，她姓陆，她有着椭圆形的面庞，浅橄榄色的皮肤，在她柳叶般的眉下，她的眼睛如天空般清澈，在那里我从没见过一丝恐惧与疑虑，在那里我的童年发出金色的光芒，她以美与勇气抵挡着一场悲剧革命的风暴，赋予我们人间乐土。
I think what is really special and amazing is that it's not only about the meaning. I think the meaning is only the first step to the translation process, right? It's really about understanding the intent of your fellow writer, and that's how it becomes maybe a person artistic practice become very collaborative, just by way of translation. And I want to ask Michael, I mean, what was your reaction when you heard Chen actually recite a translated poem of yours for the first time?
I was really taken by the rhythm of the language. And there's just two things that have been key to this process we haven't spoken of yet. One is I'm also an editor, and so I come at it with that perspective. And so when Chun was sharing her poems with me, I was also working with her as an external, eye, so to speak, and working with her in terms of my editing opinion, I'll say. And also we work with language, we work with images.
Yeah. The image is a very key element to our project. Like my mom, she's a really beautiful woman. People admire her beauty from all sides of the world. So we also brought that element into our project. When we had the workshop, we asked all of the participants to bring a family photo with them to, with their contributed articles and essays, all poems. And so that's how we showcase our work. I think both images and languages are very powerful tools for us to connect. And also we talk about the translation work, from English to Chinese, and I write sometimes in English first, sometimes in Chinese first, and I translate the original poems into the other language. So when I write in English or translate my poems in English, Michael is a very important person for me to go to. I made my own choice and I went by Michael just to see what he thinks. And mm-hmm. we often make the same choice. Mm-hmm. And I have one or two other friends I do this with. So I feel really blessed to have these great, poets or editors to work with. It has been really, really great. Yeah.
I think because I don't have too much access to the behind the scene process, we hear stories about it. It appears to me that, there's such a rigor around the way you collaborate with one another, and that you both support each other very fully and that you challenge each other as well. Mm-hmm. And I think, collaborations, even between any artists, in general, it's extremely hard to come by. I'll kind of segue a little bit into art. Art as rapid response is an area that I want to maybe discuss with you both about, because as working at the Chinese Culture Center, we're an arts, art center, and same for OACC as well. And I think there are moments where, for example, with the murder of George Floyd and also with the Atlanta shooting, were two very pivotal moments of trauma and sadness and anger for our communities together as well. And at those moments, we look for, in addition to COVID, impacting the whole world. And those moments, we would look for ways to keep making work, to put our voices out there, and to look for a way to connect with one another. So I want to share that. I want to, you know, talk to you two about the process of putting together the Artists Against Anti-Asian Hate. And that was an event that happened on April 10th. And the Atlanta shooting was March 16th. And actually, we're coming close to a 1 year anniversary in remembrance of that day. So would you want to share a little bit about how that all came about?
Well, it was a great collaboration. And the thing is, it actually led to an expansion of our vision for Two Language One Community. And before we even had the conversation with you folks at, you know, the center, Chun had raised to me, you know, the idea of responding. And we started talking about how we were going to respond. And we came up with this idea of doing these Two Language One Community projects where we pulled in collaborators. So you know, Hoi, that in addition to your organization being so critical to that event, we pulled in the Museum of the African Diaspora, for instance, and we pulled in the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts and the Yerba Buena Cultural Center. And, you know, there were a few other organizations. You guys have to help me remember them. And we had a cross-cultural collection of artists as well. And so that, to me, was really significant because, as you kind of referred to, we were responding rapidly to the environment that we were in, where there was this violence against the Asian community, and that we were using our art as a way of pulling the community together. And a key word for that whole period of organizing that event was solidarity.
Right, right. And I actually came back to San Francisco on the June, I think it's January the 30th, I arrived from China. That's the very beginning of the pandemic. And I came back because we have an event scheduled with Chinese Culture Center on February the 15th for the Chinese New Year for our Two Language One Community project. And that actually brought me back and kept me in San Francisco for 2 years before I came back again to see my parents. And it's quite a symbolic journey. And we began the Chinese New Year with basically a solidarity event without knowing what was coming our way, right? And when the shooting happened, I told Michael, I said, Michael, we need to respond to this, you know, otherwise I basically couldn't sleep if we don't do anything for this. I mean, and to express our solidarity with all communities against such violence. And so we reached out to the Chinese Culture Center, and thanks to the Chinese Culture Center for responding so fast and reaching out to so many organizations with us. Michael, listed out a few organizations, I think Asian Art Museum. I mean, these are the organizations we have been working with with multiple events during the 2 years of Black Lives Matter movements and also solidarity against anti-Asian violence. And also all of the writers and the musicians we reached out to immediately agreed to work with us. We had our Maxine Hong Kingston and Al Young's son, Michael Young, recommended him. Actually represented him. We have Afa Weaver and Jenny Lim, two amazing poets from East Coast and also our own Bay Area. And our
Tammy L. Hall.
Yeah, and she was amazing, and it was a perfect event, and during a most difficult time. Yeah.
So, yeah, and I can't, and I remember that day very vividly too. It was around like a 2.5 hour program, nearly 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And I think we had nearly, I think, 200 people in the room, and they stayed the whole time. And mm-hmm. it was tough, but it was very heartfelt, and very necessary.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we need more of that.
Yes. We do. We do.
We definitely need more of that. And I think even though it was, I mean, the digital divide and everything with COVID, I mean, on top of all of that was COVID, really.
I know, yes. Yeah,
and to kind of still maintain spaces for this kind of connection is something that I think a lot of us are having challenges with even to this day. Another kind of key moments was there was a few sort of key works that were translated during this moment between 2020 and 2021. And so would you like to share a little bit about that and maybe recite some of them?
Yeah, I want to, and again, you know, here, thanks to a invitation from the Chinese Cultural Center, I wrote this poem, To Your Assailant Who Attacked Us All. And it was a response to the violence, not just locally, but around the world, to the Asian community or against the Asian community. And sometimes you have something percolating in your mind, but sometimes it needs a spark or some impetus to kind of bring it out of your brain, out of your soul, onto a computer screen or a piece of paper and start turning it into a poem. And so that request for the project that the Chinese Cultural Center had started was what got me to write this poem. And you also requested that there be a video reciting the poem. And for me, this was very relevant. It came at the beginning of the pandemic. And one of the things that the pandemic did for me as a writer is I just told myself between the attacks against the Asian community, what was going on with the killings against, you know, unjust killings against Black people in the street, that I needed to start responding quicker. I needed to start writing things that I might have normally held on for ages. So this poem here, this is the fastest I've ever put together a poem and shared it with the public, plus shot a video on it. So this is To Your Assailant Who Attacks Us All. Do you call yourself God-fearing, devoted to do on to others? Does your God condone your violence, your ignorance, your corruption? Does your God hate your neighbor like you do? Does your God share your love for prophets bearing false witness, fueling your grievance fever? Do you swallow the lies they regurgitate? Do you really need a reason? Are you truly a true believer of both God and golden calf? Does the all-knowing know you? Do they love you as you are? Does it matter that they are watching your naked depravity? Do you pray before you pray on innocence in this guilty world? Do you have your God's blessing, or are you as godless as you seem? Did your father teach you to beat, demean, and maim? Is he proud of your cowardice? Does your mother say, well done, son? Did they train you in backwardness to feel bigger in your smallness, content with acts of uselessness? Is your inner bully seething still beneath your concealed surface? Are you comforted in your criminality, stupefied by superiority, simply insane or lost? Who are you?
So here's a Chinese version of it. 是攻击你们的人，他们在攻击我们所有人。你自称敬畏上帝吗？你致力于己所不欲，勿施于人吗？你的上帝宽恕了你的暴力，你的无知。 你的腐败吗？你的上帝像你这样仇恨你的邻居吗？你的上帝 会认同你的，带着假见证，让你的愤怒不平不断发烧的所谓先知的爱吗？你吞下他们反复口吐的谎言吗？你真的需要理由吗？你是你的神和金牛犊真正的信徒吗？你那全知的神认识你吗？他们会爱这样的你吗？你在乎他们看着你赤裸的堕落吗？在洗礼这个有罪的世界上的无辜者时，你祈祷吗？你有上帝的祝福吗？还是像你看起来那样没有上帝？你的父亲将你去攻击、贬低和残害他人吗？他会为你的怯懦感到骄傲吗？你的母亲会说干得好，儿子吗？他们训练你倒退落后了吗？你卑鄙渺小时感到更强大吗？你满足于自己无意的行为吗？隐藏在你的表面下的恶霸还在沸腾吗？你在被优越性麻木了的犯罪中受到了安慰吗？是疯了还是迷路了？你是谁？
Yeah, and this and the recording of this poem in both languages, I remember was also played during one of our rallies in Portsmouth Square in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. And that was right in the middle of COVID. So we had an invitation for artists to submit audio works as well. So this was playing in against the backdrop of people really painting large murals in what was a very, very contemplative and I think healing day and a day for also understanding as well in San Francisco's Chinatown. And I love this conversation because it really tied to from sort of the meticulousness of the, you know, the time it takes to translate the work to how you really had to act very rapidly just based on being responsive to the times. Well, thank you.
thank you
so much. And also this year's the 140th anniversary of the Chinese Exclusion Act. So I think we're really seeing the kind of robust creative energy that were so necessary, really rippling through sort of our current culture right now. And thank you so much to you, Chen and Michael, for being such a key part of it and continuing to share your work with us.
I think we feel very hopeful for the future, and just given how well our work has been received by, you know, the general public and so many cultural organizations, and even in the literary world, and the journals, many journals we work with are opening to accept bilingual poetry publication. The magazines, like including Orion and Poetry Northwest, especially will feature actually our work of the two languages and community, including the poets we are working with this summer in a special issue, a bilingual special issue. So even sometimes a magazine accepts, a journal accepts my poem because they know I'm a bilingual poet, and they knew I'm a bilingual poet. They were asked, by the way, do you have any English, a Chinese version of the poem? So we really look forward to the future.
Yeah, I think language access and having more bilingual or multilingual content in the art is something that is so important. And we talk about, you know, two languages, one community as an opportunity to connect Chinese American and also African American communities. That is one bit of social justice work that you are doing, but another piece of it is actually, you know, opening minds in the literary world as well and increasing the acceptance for bilingual work. So with that, I think we, and I'll close our conversation here because that is really an open-ended sentence, I think, and I think we're all very hopeful.
This podcast was produced with support from the Ginkgo Fund, the Asian Pacific Fund, and the Awesome Foundation. Special thanks to Jade Lin for recording and editing this episode. Want to suggest future guests? Email us at programs@oacc.cc.